Packers fans, welcome into the Green 19 podcast. I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Tom Silverstein and Ryan Wood here in Raymond James Stadium, where the Packers have defeated Tom Brady and the Bucks 14-12. It took down to the very last second, just about, to pull out a win that saw two offenses that were shorthanded, two defenses that were standout, and a special teams performance that really kind of proved a turn in the road for the Packers. We're going to get into all of that, and we'll break it down into the nitty-gritty. But, guys, and Spoon, I'll start with you. Just kind of give me your elevator pitch rundown of this game. Your Twitter 280 characters.
Yeah, it was a unusual coupling of defense and special teams that you never see from the Green Bay Packers. We haven't seen a game like that decade. It's been over a decade since they've won a close game like this with defense and special teams. Most of the time they rely on Rodgers to win the games. And their punter was outstanding. The coverage was outstanding and their defense was outstanding. And that's how you beat a really tough defensive team, is kind of match them that way.
It looks like a game where the Bucks were playing without their top three receivers. And the Packers also were not a complete offense. And that's exactly what it was. You know, for all the talk coming in about Tom Brady versus Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Rodgers versus Tom Brady, I think that is exactly what, if you were paying attention, you expected. You knew it was going to be low scoring. All four of us, I think we all four picked the Bucks, but all four of us picked low scoring games because we knew coming in it was going to be something of a rock fight, and that's what it was. And because of the incomplete offenses, I don't know how much I'm ready to take away big picture from this yet. You know, if these two teams meet in January, which is obviously very, very possible, it could be very different. You have total offense, and you've got Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Julio Jones. You got Sammy Watkins back. He had 3 for 93 last week. He was their big play guy in the passing game. You get Christian Watson, who did not play today. At the end of the season, he could have developed into a guy that can go deep, something the Packers offense had no capability of doing today. If you're able to do that, it's very different. So I don't know, you know, am I sold yet? I've got to see more, but the Packers defense did to the Bucks offense exactly what you should do to an offense that, regardless of quarterback, is missing its top three receivers.
That was a really long elevator ride, Ryan.
I do that.
As you said, this is sort of the defensive performance we expected. And to your point about, you know, we all picked low scoring games and we all went with the Bucks. I think, at least for me, and I imagine y'all too, what the deciding factor there was that I was going to ride with this Bucks defense until they proved me wrong. And to be fair, they looked like they should most of the game, but it was the difference was the Packers offense being able to actually jam it down their throat for the first three drives, which was a little surprising that they moved that easily. And of course that ended up being the difference in the game. But before we get into the Packers offense, let's talk about this defense, because this game really came down to the Bucks ability to make a 2-point conversion to send it to overtime. And they didn't, because Devondre Campbell was there. I mean, that seems like that's why you pay him, to put him in those situations. And he answered the bell. Ryan, I know you really dove into this after the game, so I'm going to just bring it to you. Is that what you kind of expect from this defense, and one that, granted, was without Jaire Alexander after he injured his groin in the first drive, but saw Keyshawn Nixon step in and really kind of hold the pail? Is this a performance from the defense that they can build off of, or is it concerning that it came down to the final play against an offense that was without all those receivers?
Well, I think the last play is always the most important, right? And football's a situational game. And in back-to-back weeks, you've got the goal line stand in the second half against the Chicago Bears, where that's a 2-touchdown game at the time. And if the Bears punch that in, it's a 1-touchdown game. That's a big moment to hang your hat on. And then the very next week, a 2-point conversion against the greatest quarterback of all time. Yes, he was without his top three receivers, and it very well might have been very different if he had them, but he didn't. you got to play what you're looking at. They did that, and they held, they dug their heels in, and they got a win. I know Aaron Rodgers said after the game that he saw something on the big screen and said something on before the 2-point conversion to Matt LaFleur. But what stood out to me is that he didn't need to, because this Packers defense, I talked with Devondre Campbell. He told me they knew the play as soon as they saw Russell Gage motion in behind Cameron Brate into a stack formation. They knew exactly what was coming, which was a snag route where Gage carried it to the back right corner of the end zone. And they practiced that all week. Now, they played it differently than they practiced it. There was a little bit of mismatch on who the DBs were supposed to take, but they were in position. Darnell Savage, if you watch the replay, he was in position to knock the ball away, if not for Devondre Campbell getting to his spot and getting the PBU. So it was anticipation, and then it was execution, and they made a play with the game on the line. And at the end of the day, that is absolutely something that you can build on.
Sorry, technical difficulties. Let's talk about the secondary for a minute, though. As we said, Jair Alexander went out with a groin injury. I know you talked to Jair in the locker room, Ryan. What was the update there?
Not much. I talked very briefly. Just, you know, hey, how you doing? He said that it was he felt his groin kind of grab on the very first stop route of the game, which the only stop route that he covered was the first play of the game. And he ended up playing 7 plays. And it was after he gave up an 8-yard out route reception to Kyle Rudolph that he left and didn't return because of the groin. And if you watch that out route, he had like no burst on the closing speed to the sideline at all. It was very clear that something was wrong with the groin. He said, I feel good. I'll be all right. We'll see. You know, those groins are tricky. No way. I mean, I can't imagine he's going to practice much at all this week. They're going to take it very cautious, but he was sitting in his locker and he was in good spirits, so that was optimistic.
We saw Keyshawn Nixon come in, and he went into the slot, and Rasul Douglas went outside to cover Jair's spot, and Brady immediately went to him a lot. And I asked Keyshawn about it in the locker room afterwards. I said, "Did it feel like they were just coming to you every other play?" And he said, "Yeah, but I figured they would. You know, a new guy comes in, he's going to test me." I said, "And he goes, I proved myself." And it kind of felt like he did. You know, he gave up a couple of plays, mostly when he was in zone. And he noted that as well in the locker room. He said, you know, I felt like when I was in man, I was fine. And that seemed to be the case. Every time he was in man, even when Tom Brady targeted him, he was either able to break up a pass in the end zone, cause a couple of incompletions, and force and then recover a fumble. That's a pretty good day when you're coming in cold off the bench and you're only expecting to play in special teams. Spoon, they have coming up the Patriots, which looks like they will be without Mac Jones, the Giants in London, the Jets, and Washington. It is dependent on what Jair Alexander's injury is. Who knows how long he might be out. He might be back on Thursday's practice. He might be out 3 weeks. Is this a secondary that we saw today that they can roll with?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's the end of the world to lose one guy, even if it's Jair Alexander. They held up pretty well. Rasul Douglas is better on the inside. I mean, on the outside than he is the inside anyways, I think. And I think Keyshawn Nixon is a natural slot. I think he's more of a slot than Rasul Douglas is. The thing that Rasul Douglas did really well today was tackle and force. And mm-hmm. You know, when they gave the ball to Leonard Fournette, he was up and, you know, helping to stop Fournette. I don't think they'd have a problem against any of those opponents that you just mentioned. Nobody there that's going to absolutely dominate them. So, I don't think it's a big deal, and I think they'll probably be pretty careful with Jair Alexander.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, Leonard Fournette finished with 12 rushes for 35 yards. Guys, it's too late for me to just do math off the top of my head, but that's not a very good average. Actually, I am going to do the math because I'm curious.
Less than 3 yards.
All our listeners are yelling at me for not being able to do that in my head like you did. 2.9, yeah. It's very reminiscent of kind of how they've held down Dalvin Cook at times. Not every game, but in certain games where they kind of know, hey, and they knew coming in that that was going to have to be their focus. I mean, the Bucs were down their top three receivers. They had to pull Cole Beasley up from the practice squad yesterday. They knew Leonard Fournette was going to be the focus. The fact that they were able to shut him down, Spoon, I'll come to you first, and then Ryan, you as well. I mean, when you know Fournette's going to be the focus, of course your attention goes there. So that being said, does that make you think that the rush defense is improving, or is it kind of like, well, that had to be what the defense was today? Does that make sense?
They had to focus on the run defense first. I mean, I think that was their number one goal, was to make sure that Fournette didn't go off. And, you know, they kept both linebackers in the game and their nickel. They didn't go to a lot of – they didn't go to hardly any dime. They went to a little bit. But, you know, Quay Walker was up in the up at the line of scrimmage quite a bit. Campbell was occasionally too. They just weren't going to give him a lot of room to run. And, you know, they often had someone up in the box too. So they were worried about Brady, but not as much as they were Fournette.
I felt like shutting down Leonard Fournette without the Bucs having their top three receivers is a lot like shutting down Dalvin Cook last year with Sean Mannion at quarterback instead of Kirk Cousins. I mean, it's just a completely different game if you have the threat of a Mike Evans or Chris Godwin going deep or Julio Jones and whatever he's got left, then what you're going against when you know that your corners, we talked about this on the podcast going into the game, when you know that your corners can beat their receivers, you can load the box, you can focus on the line of scrimmage. Their very first play of the game was a base nickel where they had five defensive linemen. They had Devondre Campbell as the lone linebacker, and they had five defensive backs. They knew going in that their DBs can beat these receivers. So without that threat, that's exactly what they're – I'm not trying to rain on what the Packers defense did, because when you're going against a depleted offense, you should shut them down. If they didn't shut them down, that would have been a blaring red sign. That would have been a big issue if the Tom Brady had his way today, but he didn't, and they did against this offense what they were supposed to. But it's totally different if they've got those three guys.
That's actually a really good transition. Let's talk about the Packers offense. As we said, they sort of rammed it right down their throat for the first three drives. One drive can be expected. That's your 15 scripted, you know, that you're coming in with. But the fact that they were able to do it for three straight drives, almost had three straight touchdowns if Aaron Jones doesn't fumble that ball. And I feel like I will give him a little bit of leeway there, because it's hard to hold onto a ball when you've got a linebacker in front of you and Vita Vea hammering you from the back.
Do you know the last time Aaron Jones fumbled after a reception?
Was it against the Bucs?
Spoon, do you really remember the last time?
Mm-hmm. I just took a total guess.
Okay. Third quarter of the 2020 NFC Championship game. Last time Aaron Jones fumbled after catching the football. He lost one last year, week four. That was while carrying it as a runner. Uh-huh. Last time he fumbled a reception. That's a pretty significant fumble in recent Packers history. So he'd been pretty good till then.
Was Vita Vea in coverage that night as well?
That was that, I think that was Devin White.
Yeah, I think so too.
If I remember right, it was a crossing pattern from right to left, and it was the very start of the second half, and it was a drive that the Packers just they had to get something going, and he fumbled it inside the 30, and it was mm-hmm. returned inside the 20, and it set up a touchdown for the Bucs. And so when the Packers had the ball to start the second half, instead, the Bucs got an easy touchdown. I think they went up 18 at that point, and then it was basically game over. And the Packers had a late push, but I mean that was a pivotal fumble in that game. And other than that, Aaron Jones pretty good at taking care of the football. To your point, Cassidy, he got smashed. I mean, he got completely sandwiched.
And what helped the Packers offense here, because they lost that on a fumble and then Aaron Rodgers was intercepted in the third quarter, was that the Bucs were turning it over as well. And it's not so much even that the Bucs were turning it over, it's that the Packers were forcing turnovers. The Bucs fumbled it twice. Yes, Brady did not throw an interception, but they fumbled it twice. Both were forced. Here's what I'm getting at. The Packers offense, like I said, had two touchdowns, then the fumble, then it went punt, 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 interception, punt, 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 end of game. how much of that spoon is the fact that they were going against an incredible defense? And do you worry, or do you say that's what this defense was supposed to do against this offense? And the fact that they were able to move the ball so well the first three drives and still keep the chains moving a little bit on the last offensive drive they had to keep the ball out of. If they had not converted that third down to Allen Lazard, I think Tom Brady would have gotten the ball back with 4 minutes left. It's a much different game than when he gets it back with a minute and 20, or I think it was. All of that to say, is there a concern, or is that what you about expected against a very, very good, until probably tonight, the NFL's top defense?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say because, you know, they did have Allen Lazard. I don't think he's running very well. I think his left ankle is still bothering him. Robert Tonyan is nowhere close to, you know, what he was before, and it's going to obviously take some time for him to get his legs under him. Dobbs right now is the only real threat they had. Now, Randall Cobb, I thought, played pretty well. I thought he looked really fast. For a guy who was sick all week, he really showed some explosiveness that I had not seen from him in a while. So and they're going to have
two receptions. He only had two receptions, but he made the most out of both of them.
Yeah, 57 yards. So they're going to have to try to get him a little bit more involved, you know, with Sammy Watkins out. But, you know, Dobbs slowly but surely is becoming their number one receiver. And I think Rodgers, he, you know, in that bunch formation down in, at the goal line, he threw it to Dobbs. And, you know, that's kind of an RPO. And you usually don't set that up for, that's usually set up for Lazard. And I don't know if he had them set up that way or what, but Dobbs was ready for it. And he made a nice catch. He made a nice catch across the middle. He really shows good explosiveness. I still think they're trying to figure out who they are, though. I think they are a running team and they've got those two guys, but they have to figure out, are they all this motion stuff that they were against the Bears? Are they two running backs, you know, Jones and Dillon together? Are they going to be throwing to the backs? Are they going to, you know, put Jones out more? I just don't think they really have an identity right now. And I think some of that has to do with the passing game just not being up to par right now.
You know, to your point, Spoon, about Romeo Dobbs, you know, Matt LaFleur was asked after the game, what was the key to this breakout? What was different than the first two games? And he just said opportunities. He was treated today like he was their number one receiver. Romeo Dobbs caught everything thrown to him. There was eight targets. He caught all eight for 71 yards and a touchdown. There was a ninth in the second half, early in the second half, that got wiped out because of a holding penalty, or was it an illegal block in the back by Allen Lazard? Mm-hmm. So even that, you know, off the stat sheet, nine times he was thrown the football and he caught all nine. That he's looking like he's ready to take that mantle maybe sooner than later. When you catch everything thrown to you, you're going to get more targets.
And I think you saw early in the game, I think Tampa was sort of playing them straight up. And then, you know, when they had some success running the ball, then they came up, they played man, you know, they brought someone in the box and they just shut the run game down and realized, well, you know, none of these guys are really going to beat our secondary. So we'll just keep playing it like that. And that's exactly what happened. They probably were kicking themselves that they didn't play it like that in the beginning. They let Dylan and Jones get some early runs and some momentum, and that cost them.
I want to go back to Romeo Doubs' 8 receptions, though. Those 8 receptions are the first time that a receiver not named Devontae Adams has had 8 receptions in a game since Randall Cobb did it in week 1 of 2018. So that's been 6 years. I mean, Romeo Doubs made the comment to me after the game. He said, you know,
Wait. Boy, your math is way off. 2018 to 2022. That's like 3 plus years.
It's late. I can't do math either. Don't worry. You know what? That opener in 18 was the comeback against the Bears. Lambeau Field. Randall Cobb went off that night too. I remember that.
And well, tonight it was Romeo Doubs. Romeo, it sounded so right in my head too. I was like, oh, 6 years. At least I didn't write 6 years in my story. I just wrote since 2018. anyways, Romeo Doubs said after the game, you know, 7 different guys caught a pass. 8 guys were targeted. 7 guys caught a pass. And 3 of them caught 4 or more. Let's see. Doubs caught 8. Lazard caught 4. Tonyan caught 6. Tyler Davis even got in the mix. 2 for 2 for 26 yards with a wide open ball that got them down into the red zone. Doubs said to me after the game, he's like, this is kind of, you know, what we're going to have to be. Whereas before, meaning before this year, he said 1, maybe 2 guys, sometimes 3, got all the passes. Now it's going to have to be a little bit of everybody. And we've seen that now for the past couple of weeks. And then again, on the first 3 drives tonight, really kind of came together. Is that sustainable? 7 guys with 4 catches or more?
Well, it is until someone steps up and becomes a true number one receiver. I mean, in the absence of that, you have to spread the ball around.
I think in Matt LaFleur's offense, at least philosophically, that's what you want to do. You know, maybe that's not realistic in the NFL anymore, where you just need a guy that you can go to. But, I think that's doable. I think we're going to see these guys get tested now. And I think we're going to see teams not worry about them as much. I think they're going to look at the film in these 3 games and say, well, who's going to beat us? You know, which of these guys can really beat us? Why do we have to keep a safety back, you know, or 2 safeties back?
Well, wait a second now.
What about when Christian Watson gets back on the field, though?
You were telling me the opposite last week after the Bears, right? When I was saying the teams are going to adjust, and you seem skeptical of them actually adjusting, which, to your credit, that they didn't today.
Yeah, you're right. I do feel like they almost always keep someone back, 2 guys back because of Rodgers. But I think there is probably – this game sort of showed me that I was wrong, that I think there are going to be teams that are willing to come up and just take out the receivers with man coverage.
I think they absolutely have to. I'm a little stunned. Todd Bowles is one of the smartest defensive minds in the game. He has a great defense that, you know, going in, you should have the corners to win those matchups. And the fact that he didn't come in that way, it's on film. Like, it's there. Like, Aaron Jones is their best player, period. And when you're just allowing him, based on how you come into a game, match up, line up, to get those yards, I don't – the defenses have no choice. They've got to take away the run game and force them to throw.
Well, the Buccaneers are a little bit of a different animal because they're not going to sit back and cover 2. They're going to blitz. They're going to play man-to-man. They're going to make you you know, try to play into their defense, into the teeth of their defense, and they figure you're not going to be able to do it for 12 plays. So if you want to go ahead and run it, you know, sometimes they'll bring a guy in the box, sometimes they won't. If you want to try to throw it, they figure they're going to sack you, you know. So it's sort of hard to tell what other teams are going to do based on the Buccaneers, because their defense is so good. And Todd Bowles, just every week it's something different, and they're very aggressive. So I guess we'll find out more, but I am changing my opinion that I do think that maybe you just play man on these guys and worry about Jones and Dillon.
I don't like living in a world where Tom Silverstein is wrong.
Yeah.
This doesn't exist. Let's dive into Jones and Dillon a little bit. Let me pull up their final stats. They finished with 12 carries each. Jones for 36 yards, Dillon for 32 yards. It's about 3 yards a pop. And then Jones had a long of 10, Dillon had a long of 7. Ryan, at one point I said to you, why are people jonesing, pun intended, so much for the run game to come back? And you said, well, because it was working. And I said, when? And I went back and looked, and correct me if I'm wrong, I want you to explain it. From what I could tell, the only time it was really working effectively for anything more than two, maybe three, and I get three straight runs of 3 yards, that's 9 yards. Well, actually, that's only nine, so you haven't moved. Point is, it felt like the only time it was really working effectively was on that first drive when David Bakhtiari was in there and they were using him to run behind.
Yeah, I actually did not say it was working. I said because they have to.
I misunderstood.
They have no choice but to run the football. And what you saw was when they were running the football and when that was in, and they got some yards early in the game, but it wasn't last week against the Bears. Aaron Jones didn't just go off. But when they were running the football, and that was the focal point of their offense the first few drives, Aaron Rodgers started something like 15 of 16. He was diabolical those first few drives. And he wasn't throwing the ball down the field, but there was one play where he put Bucks outside linebacker number 9, whose name I can't say.
Tryon.
Yeah.
I just call him Tryon.
Tryon. Put him in a total like Jedi mind warp where he was between Tyler Davis and him, and it was a lose-lose. You either like don't come up and push Aaron Rodgers at the line of scrimmage, let him get 10 yards on the ground, or you come up and you leave Tyler Davis wide open. The reason why they have to run the football, even if they're not getting massive production, is because this passing game is not good enough to just throw it all over the yard like they've done in the past. They have to run to set up the pass. And by doing that, the Packers started 5 of 7 on third down. It wasn't a coincidence that when they went away from the run game midway through, their third down conversion rate dipped, because all 7 of those third downs, they're all third and short. Because even if you're getting only 3 or 4 yards, you're setting up third and short, and that's a whole lot easier to convert than a third and long. So they have no choice whether they're getting 5 yards a clip or 2 yards a clip. They have to run the football to set up the pass and to keep on schedule with down and distance. They have to run the football.
Spoon, is that just a product of this defense that they weren't able to as much?
Yeah, and I think you have to have runs that are setting up pass. You know, they're statement runs. And actually, you know, like Ron said, getting 3 yards, setting 3 yards on first down, 3 yards on second down, setting up a third and four is pretty good. Like, you know, in the first drive, they had a first and 10, second and 7, first and 10, second and 8, first and 10, second and 6, third and 6, first and 10. You know, they were able to continue to move the chains, and those aren't bad down and distances. And in fact, they were, I think at some point they were like 4 of 4 or 5 of 5 on third downs. So they were moving the chains. It's just that later on, Tampa Bay just said, no, no more running. No, we're not going to worry about play action anymore. And you're not going to run the ball. And that really put, you know, a wrench in what they wanted to do.
Said no more. No, no soup for you.
Done.
We also saw, like we said, the return of David Bakhtiari. He played 27 snaps versus Detroit. I don't really count those. They didn't actually happen. You know, they were just there in an alternate universe. He rotated with Nyman all night. They kind of knew coming into the game that that was the plan, just because this was Bakhtiari's first real action back. It was humid. He was sort of on a pitch count. He didn't like it. But was that the right decision, Spoon?
Absolutely. I thought it was a great decision. No, you know, you got to baby him back. And in the heat, you know, that's all you need is for him to start cramping. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, favoring his knee or I don't know. I just thought it was a smart decision. You're bringing in a fresh player who you're also sending like a changeup to the Buccaneers. I mean, Bakhtiari is, of course, at full strength is the better player. But right now, Yash Nyman might be equal to Bakhtiari or maybe better. And he's fresher. So I thought that was a really good idea.
Matt LaFleur said that he took him all the way back to his very first years in the league, 08, 09, when he was an offensive assistant with the Houston Texans. And what Gary Kubiak, the head coach of that team, would do was rotate his left tackles between Mike Brazil and Casey Stuttered. And it's radical because offensive linemen don't leave the field. Like they play every snap. Offensive linemen, DBs, there are certain positions that play every snap. But Matt LaFleur said, you know, defensive linemen rotate in and out. So it's not like it's crazy, right? The defensive linemen rotate in and out to stay fresh, and that's what he wanted to do with his left tackles, David Bakhtiari specifically. Their top receiver, Alan Lazard, vomited on the sideline after catching a touchdown. Josh Myers left the game in the fourth quarter with cramps. The defense, all of them, I mean, you know, we were standing next to Adrian Amos after the game. He was like literally leaning against his locker and asking how he's feeling. He's like, definitely need some water. Kenny Clark asked him, how gassed were you at the end? Like, we were gassed. Like the defense was gassed at the end. And all those players, none of them have missed 2 years. So there's no like humanly possible way that David Bakhtiari could have come into this heat and played every single snap and been okay. Like the strain and the testing of his conditioning in that environment would have been insane. So, you know, give credit to and David Bakhtiari made it clear he didn't love that because he said it was a first for him. That's just not the way it's done on offensive line. You play every snap. But he also gave Matt LaFleur credit for sticking to his guns. And Matt LaFleur knew that he was not a fan of that plan, but he stuck to his guns. And that was the only thing that he could – there's just no way that David Bakhtiari could have played every snap here in Tampa first game back.
It was pretty dang humid.
It was hot.
It's not the heat that will get you. It's the humidity.
That's right.
And it was humid today. I asked Lazard about his upheaval on the sideline. And I said, I made a joke like, you're probably glad it didn't happen during the touchdown celebration. And he said, oh, it was pretty close to happening then. He said, actually, about three plays before that, I realized it was coming. And I thought, just get through this drive. He said, as soon as I scored, I was celebrating. And I thought, oh, here it comes. Get to the sideline. He's like, but then it felt better. yeah. I think it was a little orange Gatorade is what he told someone else.
Looked very orangey. That's a sight that I will probably never unsee. Only needed to watch it once. I watched it on your iPad, Cassie. I'm like, nope, don't got to see that again.
I know. And we were in the locker room, and Bobby Tonyan was like, I haven't seen it. Somebody show it to me.
And don't so watch it, Bobby.
No. Well, I pulled it up on my phone and showed it to him, and he looked back at Lazard, and he was like, that was great. Perfect form or something like that.
Perfect form.
Something along those lines. It was funny. Spoon, I know it was technically on a pitch count, so a limited performance, but how do you feel Bach looked in his first real action in almost 2 years?
Bakhtiari? that what we're talking about?
Buck is a that's a reasonable nickname.
No,
y'all make fun of me for calling him that.
Called him Buck until what? This year? It's the first time I've ever heard it.
Maybe I will at times in like an email, like when I emailed my story into our boss, Robert Zizou, I abbreviated B-A-K-H, but I do not call him
Bob. I think the reason I called him that is because I've seen on Packers social media, they'll use it as a pun, like B-A-K, like Bach is back.
Yeah, and I call him Bach Diori.
And so...
Or Dave. I frankly, I call him his name.
When I was talking to him in the locker room tonight, I went to say, thanks, Bach. And then I heard Spoon's voice in my head saying that's not his name. And so I was like, thanks, Dave. And
I often find Spoon's voice in my head, and it's a
it's annoying.
Spoon.
It's really annoying.
That too.
All of that to say, how do you feel David Bakhtiari looked in his first action
pass? You know what? I didn't see enough. I know they helped him early on. They had a Mercedes Lewis and Tanyan next to him just to give him a little bit of help in pass protection. But honestly, I'm going to have to look at it. I couldn't focus in on it.
The one play that stood out to me is the second play of the game where they ran it right behind him, and he kicked out number nine, which name is
Tryon.
He kicked out Tryon, and Aaron Jones just hit the hole right behind. It was a really good kick out block, one on one, got like 10 yards on it. But I'm with Spoon. It's just tough to evaluate offensive line play specifically unless you really go back and watch the film.
We also got to wonder, too, you know, Royce Newman had a couple of bad plays. Now, I don't know how he played for the whole game. But at one point, do they consider moving Elgton Jenkins back to guard?
That's the big thing. So I asked Matt LaFleur after the game, you know, next week, this week, left tackle rotation made all the sense because it's friggin' hot out there. Next week, Patriots at home in Green Bay, it's not going to be sweltering. Do you stick with this left tackle rotation? And he said, and he's right, it depends on how David Bakhtiari's knee handles the workload. I mean, he didn't want to go 0 to 60, literally 60 snaps. He went 34 today. He played 34 snaps in 6 drives, which is more than Detroit. How that knee responds is going to be everything. But if the knee responds well, if David Bakhtiari is ready to be a full-time left tackle, take all the snaps, the Packers have a huge decision to make with whether or not they like Yosh Nijman as a right tackle or Royce Newman as a right guard more, because they can either stick with what they had today on the right side and have Royce Newman at right guard and Elgton Jenkins at right tackle. And Royce Newman struggled last season as a rookie. He's not been appreciably better this season.
I wouldn't say that. But I would say that his problem is he gives up every once in a while. He just gives up a big play.
You wouldn't say he struggled last. You wouldn't say he struggled last season, or he hasn't been appreciably better this year?
No, I think he's been better this year.
I feel like he's been about the same guy. And that's, you know, look, he's an NFL player. I'm not saying the guy doesn't belong in the league. I mean, clearly he's an NFL player. Let's be clear about that. But he's nowhere near what Elgton Jenkins is as a guard, right? So, but is he better than Yosh Nijman as a right tackle? I don't know that he is. And, you know, because Yosh Nijman, as solid as he's been on left side, he hasn't played right tackle. It's been all on the left side. The Packers have not lined him up at right tackle. They barely did it in camp. After the first couple of days, he was all left tackle in reps. That's a, you know, either they go with Yosh Nijman at right tackle and Elgton Jenkins at right guard, or Yosh Nijman becomes one of the best backup left tackles in the league, which is a luxury because not a lot of teams got great depth there, but doesn't give you snaps.
Yeah, now that I think of it, we're probably getting ahead of ourselves on that because Bakhtiari's got to play a full game before they can even – entertain that thought.
That's looming, though. I think that's going to be really interesting.
It is, but is it? You know, like, let's see what happens.
That's a good point.
Everything.
Don't be a Debbie Downer soon.
Everything to me with him is, when I see it, I'll believe it.
Before we wrap up, let's talk about special teams, guys. The first couple of weeks, the message for special teams. As our colleague Pete Doherty always jokes, special teams just was taking the physician's oath, do no harm. And that was sort of what they did the first 2 weeks. They did no harm. It felt like versus the Bucks, we saw them step up and actually do good. I mean, I'm not going to go crazy yet. You know, they didn't force a turnover or score or anything like that on special teams. But, I mean, Pat O'Donnell punted 7 times for 339 yards, an average of 48.4. I think his net was around 44, which means he's not out kicking his coverage. His coverage team is good getting down there and stopping him too. And he had 5 inside the 20. Rudy Ford almost killed a guy with a tackle. Keyshawn Nixon downs one at the 1-inch line, maybe even closer than that. Spoon, I know you talked to those guys after the game. What'd you think?
Well, I'll add one more big play in there, and that was Alan Lazard getting the onside kick. That wasn't an easy ball to grab, and anybody who's followed the Packers know that onside kicks don't always go their way in big games.
So, Pauls, let me ask you a question. Alan Lazard made it abundantly clear this offseason he was not playing on special teams. Is that just a hands play? Is that your hands team?
Yeah, probably, but I wouldn't be surprised. Starters are playing, you know, maybe on one team. They'll use them on one team depending on, you know, what the situation is.
Hey, the very first play of the game, the opening kickoff, had 3 starters. Had Rasul Douglas, Eric Stokes, and Adrian Amos.
Yeah.
They've all been out there a lot of special teams plays.
Yeah, I mean.
Yeah, well, I remember talking to Amos about it, and he was like, yeah, it's fine, you know. But he's like, they don't have us on all 4 units. It's like, you know, you go on 1 unit and you play it, and that's fine. You know, he said, if you're playing 4, that's a little, you know, you get a little gassed after having just played a 12-play series or something like that. But probably the most impressive thing was the way they married the special teams with the defense. Mm-hmm. So he had first six hits, Pat O'Donnell. I think he 5 of them were in the inside the 10 or inside the 20, something like that.
And yes, he had 5 inside the 20.
6 drives, the Packers held the Buccaneers to 61 yards on like 26 plays. So every time he kicked it into the inside the 20, the defense played really well. It wasn't until the very last drive, I think they started at the 11.
Yeah.
And that was the one time. But they just kept the Buccaneers down on that side of the field. And, you know, and that's, in that case, O'Donnell's like another defensive player. Now, Rudy Ford, he's got a great chemistry with Rudy Ford. He was saying, you know, even if he's double teamed, he's kicking him his direction because he's good as a gunner. But we also saw Keyshawn Nixon catch that ball on the 2. There was just a lot of good plays. There were a couple of bad plays, you know, the roughing the punter, the block in the back by
that was Lazard. You're right. It was Lazard.
So that's a special teams.
Those were back to back, and they cost the Packers 33 yards.
Yeah, Amari Rodgers, give him credit. He had a couple of nice returns and got crushed on the sideline.
Think about this, you know, not to rain on the special teams parade, but without that running into the kicker, or running into the punter, Amari Rodgers returned that ball to the 32.
Yeah,
that's field goal range.
Yep.
This game came down to a 2-point conversion. It might never come down to that because they're in scoring position there to get points.
Well, maybe Alan Lazard didn't want to play special teams, so now he's done.
He's on another level. He's thinking ahead.
He had a couple of problems with blocking in the back today. He had one on wasn't that on Dobbs's catch out in the flat? Didn't he push someone in the back?
Yeah, that was on. Yeah.
So
Matt LaFleur said after the game he kind of took issue with the running into the kicker penalty.
I was about to ask. So did Twitter.
I don't know. It was 50-50. The guy kind of threw him in there.
I thought
he was heading in that direction.
I thought so too. I'm with you on that.
But bottom line is that the special teams played with the defense. You tell me. Actually, I went back all the way to 2010, and the last time the defense and the special teams combined to really win a game. And it was a 9-0 game against the Jets. Mm-hmm. And Tim Mastey just had this unbelievable game, the worst of conditions, and they shut out the Jets. And this was probably as close to that performance.
What about 10-3 2019 opener?
Against the Bears?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a pretty good one, too. Yeah.
That's the only other one that kind of comes to mind off the top of my head.
Yeah, that's a good point. That was a good special
team. But it's rare. Very, very rare.
To your point, the Bucs had 12 drives. I think it was 12. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They had 12 drives. Only four of them went into Packers territory. So for eight of their drives.
Four of those were three and outs. There was only two drives of those 12 all game that were longer than six plays. It was the very first and the very last. Very first 10-play field goal drive, very last 13-play 91-yard touchdown drive. Every other drive was no more than six plays. Yeah.
You know,
and that 13-play drive, that's just classic Tom Brady right there.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
When it doesn't matter who's playing receiver. When Alan Lazard was asked in the locker room, like, what were you thinking standing on the sidelines during that drive? And he goes, well, of course I've seen this before. Like, it's Tom Brady.
Matt LaFleur said that not only was he – thinking about they got to get a 2-point conversion still. They got to get a 2-point conversion. He told Joe Barry, get your best 2-point conversion play ready. But he was also thinking about what plays he would call in overtime. Why? Mm-hmm. I don't know how many. I don't know if there's a lot of, especially against this Packers defense, pretty good. I don't know if there's a lot of quarterbacks that you're thinking those thoughts. But you've seen this from Tom Brady so many times over 23 years. Mm-hmm. Spoon, you had a point you wanted to say.
Well, just in regard to the defense, and yeah, they were playing against a team that was stripped of all of most of its offensive talent. But Tampa Bay was stripped of most of those guys in the second half of the New Orleans game. Julio Jones went out. Godwin was out. Mike Evans got kicked out of the game. And they still managed to score 20 points, wasn't it? It was 3-0 at halftime. So they scored like 17 points. Mm-hmm. So it's not like they're completely a mess. They just beat their rival on the road with that pretty much that same offense. So I don't want to poo-poo the performance. I do want to, you know, say it's one performance. And the defense won the game, and it's been a while since you can say, you know, defense and special teams have won a game.
Seven of those points was a defensive touchdown.
Yeah, but that's right.
But there's – I always say this, and this is kind of – it's an analogy, but, you know, people say, how can Tom Brady and Bill Belichick both be the greatest, right, if they had each other? How can Joe Montana and Jerry Rice both be the greatest if they had each other? Well, if you have the greatest head coach, greatest quarterback, and the greatest quarterback and great receiver, you better do great things with that. Like, they can both be the greatest, but you better do great things. If you are a good defense and you're going against a offense that has no receiving talent, the top three receivers out, you better do great things against that offense. And holding Tom Brady to one touchdown and it being the final drive of the game when you're gassed at home, that's a great thing. So they did what they were supposed to do. I just don't know late in the season if they have Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, Julio Jones at home in a playoff game here in Tampa Bay. I don't know how much this performance carries over to that, because that's just so different.
You're saying here in Tampa Bay, that's assuming they'll be the higher seed.
I have no idea. I mean, it's September, so it's possible. It is September.
We're staring down the barrel of October, though. Will our next game be in the month of October?
Yes.
Oh, yep. It will be October 2nd. Ooh, start of Halloween season.
Quite an October for them, too. You've got the Patriots at home. You've got London. You've got Bills game at the, you know, at Bills in primetime late. That's a big.
They could easily be going into that Bills game 5-1, 6-1. Let me look at the calendar. They're 2-1 now. 3, 4, 5. 6. They could be going into that Bills game 6-1.
Which would completely mirror last year, and through three games, mm-hmm. this season completely mirrors last year. Last year, terrible opener. Week two, you're at home in prime time against an NFC North team that you should absolutely beat up. It was the Lions last year on Monday Night Football. Then you had a hellacious cross-country road trip week three to the San Francisco 49ers as underdogs, and they won that game. This year, same thing. Same exact thing. Terrible opener. You come back week two. You have a primetime game this time on Sunday Night Football and against the Chicago Bears, against the NFC North team that you should beat up on, and they do. Then they have a hellacious – literally, it felt a little like hell out there. You have a hellacious road trip to Tampa Bay where it's hot, where Tom Brady's waiting for you. You're an underdog, and they win that game. Last year, they springboarded off
that – They won that game at the very end too.
Yeah, yeah. They springboarded off – that's right, because that was a field goal at the end for Mason Crosby. They springboarded off that win, and they won after the opener last year. They won their next seven. They went from 0-1 to 7-1. And if you look at it, they could go from 0-1 to, like you said, what, 5-1, 6-1?
They'd be 6-1 going into Buffalo if they
– Stop it.
They could.
Why are you looking ahead to 6?
I'm just it's gonna happen. Contemplating.
The possibility is there, though. It's the road there for the same thing.
I'm sorry. I know it any given Sunday, but who of these next four teams are beating them?
I don't know. New England could beat them. Heck yeah, New England could beat them.
I would call it.
A fun little note.
Jets could beat them.
Jets? I put the Giants. I'd give the Giants a much better shot than the Jets.
Yeah, maybe a letdown in London. I'm not seeing the Jets coming into Lambeau Field and winning.
London, that's tough. You're tired. Jet lag. London, I mean.
Spoon is twisting the knife now.
The Giants have Saquon Barkley right, back.
I'm going to take off so you guys can talk about week seven. But I am not talking about week seven anymore.
Okay, give both guys – Spoon, I'll start with you since you clearly are ready to be done. Give me your 60-second sound-off wrap-up. Go.
I'm really looking forward to week four.
The next game's the most important game.
As far as I'm looking. Yeah.
Ryan?
I think this is – don't make too much out of this game. You know, there's storylines for everything. We'll see how it goes next week. A few things got established. Their defense needs to continue to get better, special teams too. But they won a game that they needed to win. That'll help them in January, as Alan Lazard said. So that's it.
Storylines keep us in business. Ryan?
You know, I don't think enough could really be made for David Bakhtiari getting back. He's had a terribly long road. And I don't think, unless you go through something like that, it's possible to really understand just how difficult returning from an ACL at this level is. And then you throw into the equation all the complications he's had, all the setbacks. He hasn't been out there because he doesn't want to be out there. He hasn't been out there because he can't be out there. And there's still a long road for him to go. If he's ever, we don't know if he's ever going to be the player he was. But getting out there and taking the biggest step he's taken to date, it's going to be very interesting to see where his knee goes from here and what that means for the rest of the offensive line. But there was a moment out there, I was looking at David Bakhtiari and Elgton Jenkins as the bookend tackles. Mm-hmm. And if those two guys get, if those two guys get their play, gets to what their name is, their name and name alone, that's the best booking tackle you could ask for, right? I mean, that's a lot of Pro Bowl, All-Pro recognition between the two of them. So I thought it was a really good first step. That and with the way that the game ended, the stopping Tom Brady at the goal line, two-point conversion, it can get lost. But that's huge for this team. And if it continues and if it progresses, that's going to be huge for this team going forward. You know, David Bakhtiari didn't play that 2020 NFC Championship game. If he does and he's healthy, I think the Packers go to the Super Bowl. I think they win that game. For him to come back to Raymond James Stadium, last time the Packers were here, he broke his ribs. This has not been a pleasant place for him to be against a team that was the team that kept him from the Super Bowl because of his absence. I think it's a pretty meaningful day for him.
Story writes itself. Poetic. As we said, we've got a couple more days of wrap up here on this game. I know, Spoon, you have a column up on special teams. Ryan on the defense. Pete on he told me, and now I'm forgetting what Pete's
column was. He wrote about how this first three games mirrors last year's.
That's what he wrote. And then I wrote about Romeo Doubs and the receivers. Check all that out on PackersNews.com. Stick with us over the next couple of days as we continue to wrap up what could be a huge win, as Aaron Rodgers said, could very well have postseason seeding applications as well. We will take you through it and get you ready for the Patriots, who are coming to town next week, albeit without Mac Jones. Guys, thank you so much. As always, this has been the Green 19 podcast from JS Online and PackersNews.com.